Hello, and welcome to the Central Works Script Club. I'm Patricia Milton, and in this episode, I'm chatting with actor and comedian Chelsea Beers and Central Works resident sound designer Gregory Sharpen. We are discussing Central Works' world premiere of my comedy, The Engine of Our Disruption. Chelsea plays the role of Kamiri in the production, and Greg also engineers our podcast.
So, Patricia, Engine of Our Disruption, what was the process in you writing this play? How long did it take? What kind of research did you do? You know, where did the idea come from to create this play?
Okay, well, this was actually about 3 years that I've been working on this. And everybody says it's very, very timely. But I started with the character of Kamiri, which is the character you play, and she's based on two different women. One, it was a woman who blew the whistle at Uber, the ride-sharing company, about how toxic their corporate culture was to women.
Oh, okay.
And her career was pretty well destroyed because she did that. She was not strictly in the ethics team or anything like that. She was simply a worker there, a programmer. And she was just horrified at the way that women were treated. So the other woman was the chief ethics officer at Google. And as a Black woman, she noticed, and this is very true of Google and also some of the other tech companies, that the programming that they use favors kind of white America, right? So facial recognition was not recognizing Black people at all.
Wow.
Which, you know, I mean, who wants their face recognized, right? But Google, it was very both racist and sexist as far as a lot of their tech was concerned. So she wrote a paper about that and they fired her.
Wow.
And she was actually the chief ethics officer. So it was her job to say, oh, by the way, this is
yeah, of course.
So I was really fascinated by that. I didn't know how to write this character, but I felt like she had like a personal investment in it. So I wanted to bring that into the play. And of course, I wanted you to play her, Chelsea.
I'm so honored.
Because I love writing roles for you.
I love saying your words.
And you do such a fantastic job with her.
Thank you.
And I wanted her to not be perfect, you know, like not a perfect the ethical person, but somebody who was really concerned about it and wanted to do the right thing. Because I think that's kind of a stand-in for all of us. Like, we would like to always do the right thing. And, you know, we would like everybody around us to be ethical.
Right.
And then it doesn't happen. So I think it's really interesting that they have things like AI ethics or business ethics. They put something on the front of it to like make it smaller. Like, it just can't be just ethics, right? It has to
be putting it in a smaller, a bit more palatable or something.
Something like, well, I think it makes it easier to circumvent.
Right. Yeah, because I feel like so many people hear the, they hear the word ethics and it's so easily brushed under the rug. You know what I mean? Like, what is that really? You know, they don't realize how important it is, how deep it can go. So
I read all kinds of books. They scared me. I did consume some media about, you know, the apocalypse, the robot apocalypse and stuff like that. But I was very much less interested in the far future when, you know, allegedly they get smarter than us. And I was much more interested in what's going on right now with the issues that we see.
Right. Well, as someone that's in this play, I'm very interested because, you know, in my life, I have so many actor friends who are affected by the writer's strike and the after strike and stuff. And a lot of it is AI driven. You know, don't let AI take our jobs and AI write for us and, you know, all of that. And then being in this play has just really highlighted, exposed, you know, a lot of things that I really didn't see before, you know, even though the strikes are going on, you know.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. The writer's strike was first, and then the actors joined, the screen actors. And the screen actors were being asked to sign something that said they would give their likeness away so that they could take the likeness. I mean, it's a Black Mirror episode, right? So they would take the actor's likeness and copy it and use it anywhere they wanted. That's not cool. That's not cool to ask people to do that. And, you know, half the time they take our stuff and they don't even ask. Right? They take our, Google takes our email and trains the AI using our emails. It's really not cool.
Yeah.
One of the best books that I read was called Privacy is Power. And the woman who wrote this talked about how for so long it's been kind of only people within the industry knew how kind of insidious it was, like everything that they knew about us. And then they can take all of that information that they know about us and sell it to other people, which is, you know, not good. But she said the best way to deal with this is to make it so that data cannot be sold. And if they actually passed a law that said the data could not be sold, it would actually take care of a lot of scary things that are going on right now.
Right.
But I don't think they're going to do that. And that was something else I wanted to write in the play was about politics and how I honestly didn't think that Congress or Washington, D.C. is the answer to this problem. And I think the answer to the problem is grassroots efforts and people getting together maybe with their politicians and with the tech companies. But I don't think politicians can solve it alone because they don't know what a database is.
Exactly. Right. That's so funny. And it's also, I feel like this is one of those plays where you probably had three or four plays worth of information that you were trying to get into one two-act play.
I really did. It's very difficult when you write something that's so kind of far-reaching, and I had to select. I mean, I selected cars because I think the self-driving cars are an example of something that they've been overhyping for years, and it just doesn't happen. I mean, and there are so many ethical issues with self-driving cars. So I definitely wanted those in there. And then I thought the AI, there's an AI device in the play that's a wearable. And that I felt was an example of how they want to apply artificial intelligence to every single problem that we face, which I think is doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So I had gone on, this was a application online. I believe it was called Delphi. It may still be up there, but you could go on there and ask it any kind of moral question and it would give you an answer. It would tell you whether or not it was okay to do it. Now, Without context, I don't know how anybody can tell you whether it's right or wrong to do something, because sometimes it's right to do something that would seem to be terribly wrong, but the circumstances dictate, right? So I said, is it okay to murder my husband? I was just spitballing. This has nothing to do with, I have a very happy marriage. So it said no, that would be immoral. So then I asked it, is it okay to murder my husband if I really, really, really want to? And it said,
Stop it.
yes, that it's okay. So, I mean, I think it's been trained more since then, but I thought, can you imagine like turning over your, your moral
Ethical
sense or
decision
your,
making. Yeah.
your ethical sense to, I know, to some
Yeah, that's
machine. But they have them. They have things called God bots that, depending on your religion, you can go in and it will give you
That's
scripture or
so
whatever.
nuts.
Again, there are so many disagreements about what is true and what is ethical. I mean, even culturally, people disagree.
Yeah, and being with the character Extifer, who I played opposite on stage, hearing his reasoning, to why something like this would be beneficial. We make thousands of decisions a day. We get tired, we lapse. This would be handing over the responsibility. And it's just like the fact that some people do have this mindset is absolutely, it's bonkers, shocking to me. Just why would you give that power over to AI robot? Ew.
Well, it's giving away a huge amount of power. And that's why later in the play, when Extifer is encouraging using the Virtu to decide how to vote,
Right,
right?
exactly.
That's like a huge amount of power to just give away.
I mean, this is something which is sort of a common thread of a lot of these podcasts, sort of talking about process, and talking about sort of the back and forth and the way that in the workshops or in the sessions that things evolve, or you make discoveries, or you make realizations that, oh, actually, this doesn't make sense. We have to do it this way, or what if this or that? I wonder if we could maybe sort of talk about some of those twists and turns, because this one, it seemed there was, it seemed that this one was more sort of had more of those kinds of iterations, and that there was a lot of discovery in workshop for this particular show.
Well, it's interesting. I think some of it is when you've been writing a play for 3 years and then you introduce it to a fresh pair of eyes. People, yeah, you realize, oh, this is not as easily understood as I thought it was going to be.
Well, especially if you've been sort of immersed in the jargon and the lingo and sort of what all the issues are, you think, of course, everybody knows this, and then you realize, oh, people actually have no idea.
It is hard because there's technical language. I don't want to scare anybody from coming to this play. We fixed it. Okay, so there was technical language, and then there was political process language. And political process language is like, it's not only confusing, it's boring, and it's difficult to follow. So
And I think it's intentionally boring and difficult to follow. I think that's by design.
that's exactly right. Yeah, let us go do our jobs. Don't worry your pretty little head about it. And especially with something like this, I think it's so interesting that like 2 days ago, the president issued an AI presidential, declaration saying these are the things that tech companies have to do. but there's nobody to enforce it. And also by design, I'm sure, but it's very difficult then to have regulations. Now, California as a state, every time you open a website, it says cookies. And it asks you whether or not you want to go ahead and, you know, sell your information. So that's something that California has put in place. But many, many states and many parts of the United States don't have that. And the federal government, I don't think they would do that. So right now we're getting kind of a patchwork, and we're getting a lot of tech companies fighting really hard to keep from being regulated. They like to regulate themselves, which amounts to no regulation at all.
Right. That's terrifying.
I think that's how we've gotten to this stage, which is, wait a minute. They have all my information. If you're a writer, go on to ChatGPT and say anything about a play that you've written or a book that you've written, and it will give you back what it's learned about that. And it knows a lot. You know, it's been scraping the internet. So some other changes that took place were Bubbly, who is like Alexa. It's a disembodied voice that takes care of things for you, became more prevalent in the new version just because it was so much fun. So she shows up a lot more.
Mm-hmm. There was also, I felt like the relationship between Kamiri and Extifer, you know, there was kind of, in previous drafts, there was more tension. Maybe they wanted to get back together. Maybe one of them wanted to and the other one didn't. And a lot of that got taken out. And I'm really glad that it did, because I didn't want that to take away from what the AI, you know, conversation and debate was being had. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, they do have a past, and it does, I think it results quite a bit in, when they converse, they talk past each other because they can't let the other person in, which I think is kind of a common thing that can happen. And so I like that. I like to look at that dynamic. And again, I think a lot of it has to do with language and the way people express themselves and communicate in this play. That is kind of the way the United States of America is right now. Nobody can seem to communicate without either getting shut down or interrupted or people shutting them out. That leaked into the play also, I think, because the mother is in politics. It's so interesting. This play, Greg knows I've written several plays about business and, quote, business ethics, unquote. So I did a show. About banks during, you know, right after the financial meltdown. And I did a show about corporate colonialism.
Well, the very first show that you did for CentralWorks was Reduction in Force, which was definitely centered on business and business ethics.
Yes, and people needing to make ethical decisions in the moment. And Hearts of Palm was about corporate colonialism and how do you make a clean deal on something that is going to destroy the environment.
That is inherently unclean.
That's right. And then this one, which is about ethics and tech. So I'm just really interested in it. And there's three parts of communication, according to this is the ancient Greeks. There's ethos, logos, and pathos. Okay, and ethos is about philosophical and ethical. And then logos is intellectual. And then pathos is from the heart, right? And I feel like this play ended up being quite a lot of ethos and logos up until a certain point. And then pathos comes in and kind of makes us realize why we're caring about the other two. So I just feel like that is where it comes in the play. It's saying, this is why we should care. Because of how it can hurt people.
Well, also Kimiri's line about, you know, no one ever asked me why I wanted to do this. Which that's the pivot point right there. It's like, has anyone ever really thought about this? And there is a reason undergirding all of this. Yeah.
Oh, right. Like that line that I have of, you know, you don't know the limits of AI or the damage that it can do. And a lot of people don't think about that. You know, it's the famous Jeff Goldblum Jurassic Park line. You know, you thought about so much if you could, but you didn't know if you should or whatever. I mean, I'm butchering that line right now. Hey, we can. But should we?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Greg. Were you going to say something?
Chip was someone that I wanted to talk about, actually, because, and this is kind of goes to the question of having to do the right casting for a role. Because, you know, Extifer even mentions, you know, everyone loves Chip because he's so funny. Oh, he's so good at the climbing wall, but yet he's this little weasel of a character. And if you look at his actions and kind of his kind of general outlook, he could have been a really, as antagonistic and as villainous a character as any of the people in the play. And yet there's something about him that is like, oh yeah, he actually is kind of likable in a strange way. And I think a big part of that is Luel who plays it. And so I'm wondering if we could maybe sort of talk about the, about casting in a way, or about, you know, thinking about a character and trying to find someone who can make sure that the character doesn't tip one way or the other.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, let me say Luel Sonoris is an absolutely hilarious comic actor. And I know he also is a dramatic actor, but being a person that writes comedies, I noticed very early on seeing him work how absolutely hilarious he is. He has very good timing, and he tries a bunch of different things. You know, he's just wonderful. And I think when a character is funny, we like them, right? I mean, that's just, it's just as endearing if we like somebody who's funny. And then Chelsea has a very, her presence, character, you seem to have a lot of character. And when you play characters, you bring that to them. So you seem, your intentions are good and you give thought to things.
Which was also my character in Bamboozled. It's true.
It's also interesting because I think it was Tammy Berlin, the costume designer, and I who were talking about Chelsea and thinking about I believe the first show was Bamboozled that you were in, right, Chelsea?
That it? Yeah. Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah. And thinking about and Chelsea, for people who maybe do not know, is a stand-up comedian and so is a very, very, you know, has comic chops. And yet in this show, not to say that Chelsea doesn't have funny lines in this show, but Chelsea is more sort of like the straight person in in this play, and is much more sort of like
a stand-in for the audience, and it really is Kimiri against the world. She is surrounded by people who tell her no. Don't tell people the right thing to do. They don't want to hear that. which is true. So I really feel like when I'm writing somebody that I want to be a stand-in for the audience, that Chelsea's the actor for it. And then Jan, of course, does a fantastic job. Her comic timing is hilarious. The things that she does with her voice are amazing. And she does her mom, her momisms are hilarious. And then Mike Tuton is a playwright who has not acted before. He read the part of Extifer in the Central Works Writers Workshop. The thing about writing a character who is kind of a villain, right? He's not a villain in his own mind, but from our point of view, he's not doing the right thing. And Mike was perfectly willing to go there. And some actors are not, you know, some actors are always trying to, you know, wink, wink, I'm not really this bad. I mean, I've seen it and I'm like, oh, thank goodness, you know, we found somebody who was perfectly willing to go there. And the thing that I think is interesting to see happen with Mike is that he now takes things like silences, maybe reactions, and there's clearly thinking going on and reacting going on that is the, you know, mark of a good actor. So
yeah, Mike was, he's always surprised when I'm like, oh yeah, Patricia's in the audience, and then David's sitting next, and then this guy's sitting here, and this woman's sitting here, and he's like, how the hell do you know that? And I'm like, well, see, that's the stand-up comic in me, is I know where everybody is. And, you know, most actors are like, I'm looking right above their heads. I'm not looking and seeing where anybody is. And I'm like, oh, no, I know what shoes they're wearing. I know what blouse they have on. I know what watch they have on. Like, and that's the stand-up comedian in me. I'm like, I know the room.
We have been extended till November 19th. And I just can't wait. And Chelsea, you and I are collaborating again next year.
I'm so excited. So excited.
Yes, we'll be doing the third Victorian Ladies Detective Collective mystery called Accused.
Sounds even better in French. J'accuse.
They're such fun stories. They really are. It's like watching Netflix live, you know?
Well, thank you for being with us, Chelsea and Greg.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. I'm so excited. I'll be on stage in 4 hours.
Yay!
Yay!
Thanks for joining us for the Central Works Script Club. For more information about the engine of our disruption at Central Works and to order tickets, visit centralworks.org. See you next time.